Now, that was a kind of tolerant religious regime that the army and Cromwell wanted to establish. But the parliaments of the Commonwealth didn't like this at all. And they didn't like the fact that this arrangement was imposed by the army, and they didn't like its substance either. And the fury, the anger of the parliaments at this excessively tolerant Protestant religious regime was focused on the sects in particular, the non-conforming Protestant group. Indeed, as early as 1650, the Rump Parliament would pass fairly severe measures against religious non-conformity. Observation of the Sabbath was made compulsory, swearing and cursing became criminal offenses, and the death penalty was actually prescribed for adultery, fornication, and incest, although in actual practice, very few people were executed for adultery. Would have probably entailed an enormous death toll. Now, these actions of the Rump Parliament, it seemed to me, reflect really a fear of the kind of anarchic implications of the radicals, of the ranters, of the diggers, and the levelers. And the Protectorate would also see really a fairly spectacular case of persecution of the English Quaker evangelist James Naylor. In the year 1656, as part of a preaching tour that he'd gone on in Western England, Naylor reenacted, by riding into the town of Bristol, the city of Bristol, on a donkey, he reenacted the entry of Jesus into Jerusalem with himself in the role of the Messiah. And Parliament was absolutely outraged at this, and Naylor was subjected to a truly ferocious punishment. He was branded, he was flogged, and it was decreed that he be bored through the tongue, that is to say, that a red-hot iron be shoved through his tongue. Cromwell's reaction to Naylor's blasphemy was actually rather revealing. "If this be liberty," Cromwell said, "God deliver me from such liberty." When Cromwell died in 1658, in September of 1658, he would be succeeded by his son Richard Cromwell. Richard would take a slightly different course from his father, but the consequences are telling and equally revealing of the deep gap between Parliament and the army. Richard Cromwell's actually only had one Parliament. It met in January of 1659, and what's interesting is that the conservative majority which dominated this Parliament instantly began to do two things. It began to restrict the extent of religious toleration, and it also began to restrict the freedom of the army to engage in political activity. What we see here is this conservatism coming through again. People wanting to have some kind of religious uniformity, repress the sects, and not to have a politically active army. Now, under pressure from the more radical junior members of the army, who continued to call for many of the reforms which had been demanded in 1647, the military high command reacted against this. It forced Richard to dissolve this parliament in April of 1659, and Richard Cromwell himself resigned shortly thereafter. What the army then did was to resummon the surviving members of the Rump Parliament of 1648 to 1653. But what's interesting is that it was impossible for the Rump Parliament really to achieve any kind of results. The old alliance between the army and the radicals, between army radicals and republicans had clearly broken down. And even the Rump Parliament began to display the antipathy which republicans felt for the army. And therefore in 1659, October of 1659, the Rump itself was dissolved by the army. You could see the Rump in a sense dissolving, the army dissolving parliaments and trying to put a different assembly in its place and still getting something which is hostile to the army's ambitions. When this happens over and over and over again, ultimately the army itself began to fracture politically. And in January of 1660, a general in Scotland, a general Monk, declared himself for the Rump Parliament and began to march south. So what we see happening now is that the army itself has lost its political unity, and part of it is declaring itself for a parliament which has just been dissolved by the rest of the army in England. Once Monk reached London, he was wise enough, he was astute enough, he was a real political realist, he could see that Richard Cromwell, the Rump Parliament, indeed the army itself, were all politically bankrupt. The political nation just didn't have any faith or any confidence in them at all. Indeed, the gentry as a whole, I think it has to be said, had really never been completely reconciled to the rule of any of these regimes, whether by the army or by the Rump Parliament itself. And Monk's decision was actually, the decision that followed was actually really quite interesting. He decided to try and reconstitute the old Long Parliament, which had been purged in 1648. Of course, a lot of the people had passed away. John Pym, for example, had been dead for many years. But Monk pulled together what was left of that old Rump Parliament of 1640, which had been purged in 1648, and what that ensured, therefore, was a kind of monarchist sentiment rather than a republican majority in Parliament. On the 16th of March, therefore, 1660, the Long Parliament, which had first met nearly 20 years earlier, made its decisions. It voted to dissolve itself, and 9 days later, on the 25th of May, 1660, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, after an exile of nearly 10 years, Charles II, son of the executed King Charles I, landed at Dover to take up his crown as King of England.